Blog Talk Radio.
And I got the HD blues, and my life feels kind of rough. Baby, I won't ever, ever give up. You might see me moving.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. This podcast is made possible by Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Lauren Holder, and today our guest is Dr. Peter Holman. He is the head of the Biostatistics and Bioinformatics Unit at the MRC Center for Neuropsychiatric Genetics and Genomics at Cardiff University and has over 25 years' experience in the statistical analysis of complex genetic traits, both in data analysis and developing novel genetic methodology. He has led the statistical analysis of large multi-center collaborations and genome-wide linkage of schizophrenia and association in Alzheimer's disease schizophrenia of particular relevance to HD and other repeat disorders. He led the pathway analysis of the two GEM genetic modifiers and also the genetic analysis of HD progression, implicating DNA repair pathways as modifiers both of age at onset and progression in HD. He has also led the pathway analysis of HD RNA sequence expression data in myeloid cells and whole blood, implicating immune pathways as relevant to HD pathogenesis and uncovering shared susceptibility pathways with other neurodegenerative disorders. Currently, he is interested in discovering genetic modifiers associated with other phenotypes, particularly psychiatric in HD. He's married to Leslie Jones, and they live in Cardiff with three cats. He's a keen bridge player, fond of watching cricket, and also a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. Dr. Holman, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Lauren. And I noticed that the Cardinals beat the Cubs last night, which is making me feel in a very good mood. So.
Oh, it sounds like you're, you know, the Cardinals fan of baseball. I'm more of a football fan, so... but I'm very glad your team won, making you feel good today.
Football as in American football is that, so.
Yes, American football.
Football as in, yeah,
soccer,
okay, right, okay.
Yeah, though soccer is wonderful too. My husband used to play soccer, so I do have an interest in that as well. Right. But, yeah, American football
right.
For sure.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and jump into our questions here. Why do you enjoy researching HD in particular?
So I think there's three main reasons for this. I mean, I started off working in other diseases like psychiatric disorders and also, you know, Alzheimer's disease. But so the first reason I like working on HD is I think it's a really interesting field scientifically. And I think, you know, with the recent genetic studies of age of onset and progression, you know, I think we're really making some real progress into understanding the biological processes. You know, it sort of feels like we're actually in a sort of big expansion period of sort of HD research, you know, and it's kind of it's interesting to be in that. So, and you know, I feel like I can really make quite a difference, you know, with my own research here. So the second reason is that I found that the HD scientific community is, compared to some other disease fields I've worked in, mentioning no names, the scientific community in HD seems to be really open and collaborative. And I think, you know, quite a lot of the credit for this must go to the funding organizations such as CHDI, you know. So I mean, it's a really nice field to work in. And I think that probably the most important reason is that, you know, I've been really impressed since I got into HD research by the commitment and the involvement of HD patients and their families in the research. You know, they're really engaged. And, you know, so I think that's really quite an inspiration.
So do you find that... that most people in the HD community are very involved, as you said. Is that, how is that different from like Alzheimer's? Are they not nearly as involved with research?
Well, I mean, it's not so, it's not quite as obvious. I mean, so you know, the first HD meeting I went to, you know, they basically had, you know, family members and patients, you know, HD patients there, you know, actually as part of the scientific meeting, which was quite interesting. So I've never seen that before in any of the other fields I've worked in. So, I mean,
oh, really?
It's all
That's
a bit more at arm's length. So, yeah. No, I mean, the way they sort of seem to be really, really directly involved in the research is quite, I like that. That's good. So,
yeah, I've actually been part of a focus group for research. I flew out to Sacramento, California, and helped with a focus group there. And I've actually been a patient advocate for a clinical trial. So, you know, I know personally I'm very involved when it comes to Huntington's. And I know that we really, really push our community to be involved in research because it's so important, because otherwise we can't find a cure. So it's great hearing that that's the case, that, you know, that researchers are feeling like we really are getting involved.
Yeah, no, that really comes over very strongly, I think. So
that's great. So today we're talking about a specific study. The study is called Genetic Risk Underlying Psychiatric and Cognitive Symptoms in Huntington's Disease. How did this study come about?
Well, so in your little potted bio that you started off with, and I was, as you said, I was involved in the two big GEM consortium studies of age and motor onset, and also in another association study of progression. And, you know, I was kind of inspired by, you know, the success that those had. And I thought, you know, what about other symptoms in HD? So it's known that psychiatric symptoms are more common in HD patients than in the general population. So, for example, psychosis is about 10% in HD. You know, schizophrenia is about 1% in the general population. But I also noticed that the factors underlying the susceptibility to these psychiatric symptoms, you know, aren't terribly well studied. So I thought, well, given that we found genetic contribution to age of onset and progression, I thought there might be a similar sort of genetic contribution to psychiatric symptoms. And furthermore, this actually might be shared with, you know, the psychiatric disorders that I also work in as part of my work here in Cardiff. So I work in the neuropsychiatric genetics group here. So, you know, psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and bipolar are, you know, kind of our bread and butter, really. We've done a lot of work in those, and we got some really big samples to look at. So that was kind of the rationale. You know, I was looking to see, is there a genetic contribution to psychiatric symptoms in HD, and is it shared with the other psychiatric disorders in the general population?
Okay, that's awesome. And what did the study entail?
Okay, so I started off with some of the GWAS data that I've been using as part of the GEM consortium for the studies of age of onset. And so what this consisted of was 5,160 HD patients, and they've got genome-wide genetic data already. They also have 7 psychiatric symptoms measured, and these are psychosis, depression, apathy, irritability, violent aggressive behavior, perseverative obsessive behavior, and a cognitive impairment. Okay, so these are the 7 symptoms I studied. And I should point out here that these are fairly crude measures. They're basically binary measures. Have you ever experienced the symptom, yes or no? And they're taken from something called the Clinical Characteristics Questionnaire. So they're not very not very refined symptoms. You know, they're just a sort of basic starter way in, as it were. So, okay, so those are the symptoms. And then what I needed to do is to for each individual in the study, I needed to give them a measurement of genetic liability to these psychiatric traits I'm interested in. And the way you do that is you look at the results of the genome-wide association studies for your psychiatric trait. And that gives you a list of genetic variants that are influencing the risk of that psychiatric trait. And then you go back, you take a set of these genetic variants, and you go back to your genotype data for your HD patient, and you basically say, how many of these risk-influencing variants does this individual have? Okay, so it's not really rocket science. You're just counting up the total number of, you know, risk genes that they have for say schizophrenia, and you sum this up over a large number of variants, and this is something that's known as a polygenic risk score. So it's a measure of genetic risk, and it's, well, and as its name suggests, it uses many, many genes. Okay, and so that gives you basically a number. And the higher that number is, the higher your genetic risk is for whatever trait you've based the variants on. So schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, whatever. So that's basically what I did here. And I should say, this is actually quite a common procedure in the genetic analysis of common complex traits that we work on. So the thing about these is that we found that there are many, many genetic variants associated with disease risk, but they've each got very small effects. So to get a good measure of disease risk, you can't just look at one variant on its own. You have to sort of add their effects together. And that's basically the idea here. Does that kind of make sense?
It does, yes. And what were your results?
I haven't quite finished describing the study yet. So basically we did this for a number of different psychiatric traits. We had six psychiatric disorders, and we got these summary stats here from the Psychiatric Genomics Consortium that we're part of here in Cardiff. So I used schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression, ADHD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and autism. I also looked at two neurodegenerative traits, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and also a genome-wide association study of intelligence. Okay, and then basically for these nine disorders, I calculated these genetic risk scores in the way I just told you about, and then basically I tested for association between these genetic risk scores and the presence or absence of the symptoms, the seven symptoms I described earlier in the sample. So that basically I'm looking for correlations between symptom and genetic risk score.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So did you find that, at least in Huntington's, like one type of psychiatric disorder is more common?
Okay, so the psychiatric disorders themselves are more common in Huntington's than they are in the general population. But what the interesting thing that we found is actually we did find there were quite a number of associations between these genetic liabilities, risk scores for psychiatric disorders, and the psychiatric symptoms in HD. So there is a general shared genetic basis between these disorders and the symptoms. And there were a couple of particularly strong associations that we found. Firstly, the schizophrenia liability, the schizophrenia risk, is associated with increased risk of psychosis in HD. Well, that's really interesting, because that's kind of what you'd hope to see, because obviously psychosis is the major feature of schizophrenia. It's also associated with irritability. The other thing is, the other main association we found is that major depression risk was associated with increased risk of depression in HD. So it does look like the HD symptoms are really quite specific in the sort of their shared genetic risk with the psychiatric disorders. And I should also point out, we also found that cognitive impairment was associated with risk of decreased intelligence, again, as you might expect. So.
Yeah, I think.
So can I just say one other very interesting thing we found? Sorry.
I was just saying so that as far as the cognitive impairment is probably in every Huntington's patient.
Yeah, I guess there's probably a sort of definition for how severe it has to be before it's. It was quite frequent in our sample, but not everybody had the sort of the diagnosis of it. So there must be some sort of threshold for how severe it has to be before. Yeah. So the other interesting thing we found was with apathy. So naively, I thought apathy and depression would be kind of similar, but it turns out that, you know, while depression was associated with genetic risk of psychiatric symptoms, and in particular the major depression, apathy didn't have any associations with these psychiatric disorders, but it did associate, again, with the liability to the risk of decreased intelligence. So apathy looks more like a sort of cognitive symptom in that sense than a psychiatric symptom. So it seems to have a different background to the other psychiatric symptoms, which I found was quite interesting, although possibly HD clinicians would probably maybe not be surprised by this. But.
No, I find it very interesting that it's not linked necessarily to psychiatric, but more of the cognitive. My father has Huntington's, so realizing that, that's more of a cognitive decline and not a psychiatric side of the disease is very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah, to me that was surprising and interesting. So.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. Did you do, because you mentioned age of onset and stuff in your other research, with the psychiatric, I mean, you're just doing the correlations of the genetic side of it.
Yeah,
this
is only,
in this study.
Yeah, we haven't actually done that yet. It's one of the things we're going on to look at. Of course, one of the things, you know, the psychiatric onsets are, of course, heavily correlated with the age of motor onset as well. So we would need to sort of try and sort of disentangle those effects, I think. But so there might be a few tweaks in the analysis. But, yes, that is something we're going to go on and look at. So.
Oh, that's great. That's definitely, I know, for pre-symptomatic people, it's a good thing to know if they're dealing with the psychiatric symptoms, which not everybody deals with the psychiatric symptoms. That's correct, too, right?
Mm. Right. No. No, they don't really, they don't seem to be terribly well studied. So.
So what other type of research are you doing right now for Huntington's? You just mentioned figuring out age of onset in relation to psychiatric.
Yeah.
But what else?
So, I mean, we're going to carry on with this study. As I said, this is only a first step. You know, we used some fairly crude measures of you know, symptom presence. What we want to do is sort of refine the definitions of our symptoms. So, for example, incorporating measures of severity. Also, we have some longitudinal data on some of our individuals, so we could sort of try and model longitudinal progression here. We also, I mean, we've just found a sort of generalized overlap between symptoms and psychiatric disorders. We want to try and nail down which particular genetic variants, genes, and biological pathways are involved as well. And of course, we can use the information from the genetic studies of the psychiatric disorders for doing that. So once we've found the sort of the relevant genes and variants, then I guess we can go and sort of model them biologically in the lab. So, although I'm not directly involved with that. So.
That's awesome. So this study will continue, and you'll kind of define more rather than it being just crude information. It'll be more defined.
Exactly. We're trying to refine the phenotypic information on one side and the genetic information on the other. So to sort of try and really sort of nail down, we know which genes and pathways, biological pathways, are the ones to look at. So.
Well, I know that I'm definitely looking forward to that information.
Yes, I'm sorry. It should be interesting.
Oh yes, it definitely should be interesting. It's something that I know the HD community is very interested in, because we deal so much with psychiatric symptoms, and you know, obviously, I've been told. Not everything is related to HD, but when you have tested positive for HD and then you hear that you've got depression, it's hard not to correlate that with Huntington's. So having research backing, you know, that information, it's going to be very interesting to see how much is related to the genetic side of it.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
So do you have any final thoughts for us?
I guess what does this all mean? To me it seems that, the research is basically showing that the psychiatric and cognitive symptoms have the common etiology with this, you know, the shared, you know, background with the similar traits in the general population. I guess to me it's kind of interesting because it sort of provides, it suggests that, you know, the treatments that are used in the wider population for depression and psychotic symptoms, you know, they may also be effective in HD as well. So we can sort of tap into the research that's going on in depression and schizophrenia and maybe that use those to sort of help with treatments for the symptoms in HD, don't you think? I mean, so that would be... And the only other thing is, I should point out, although we found interesting and sort of statistically significant results here, they're not really accurate enough to be actual predictors. They're not good enough to be able to tell you which person, which HD patient is going to get a psychiatric symptom or not. You know, so that's not how these things would be used. I mean, it may be possible to derive such predictors in future. You know, so for example, in Alzheimer's disease, that, you know, we are getting to a situation where we've got genetic predictors that are clinically useful. We're a long way off from that now, so we wouldn't be able to tell an individual HD patient based on their genetic data, hey, you're likely to develop psychosis or whatever. So, but maybe in the future we will be able to, but that's quite a long way off. So,
yeah, right. But it's still very very interesting to know if, you know, psychosis is caused by the Huntington's based off of the genetic, you know, modifiers. And I'm sure as you define more, like you said, you may be able to do that in the future, which would be extremely helpful,
yeah,
I'm sure, for some of our families.
Yeah. I said that. Oh, yeah, no. This research has only just started, really. So, you know, we would need much larger,
yes,
samples to be able to get down there.
Right, so, exactly.
So get down that path. So. But it would be an excellent thing if we were able to do it. But, so we're a long way off from that now, at the moment. So.
Well, Dr. Holmans, I really appreciate you coming on our show today and sharing the information about this study and what you're doing, and we certainly appreciate all the research that you're doing for the Huntington's community.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
And our show next week is actually going to be about suicide prevention. We're going to have somebody come on and talk with us from the ASFP. I messed that up. But they'll be coming on and talking with us. An expert will be coming on and talking with us about depression and suicidal ideation and suicide prevention. So, you guys look forward to that, and I will talk to you guys later. Bye. Take care.
Okay. Bye.